The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yeah, well, here we are again, once again, Raised by Wolves podcast. We are back here on Podcast 1, iTunes, 1500ESPN.com, Manny Hill, Derek James. We're here. It's NBA offseason. We've seen some crazy NBA offseasons in the past, Derek, but this one kind of stands out, to be perfectly honest, with all the moves, all the signings, the trades, everything.
I guess before Gordon Hayward signed, there was actually less flurry compared to last year, but I would just say in general, when you factor in just the trades and the magnitude of them, that, yeah, this is probably the craziest one that I can think of.
And we have a guest on the line, and I'm sure he's been no stranger to off-season craziness. He's on the phone with us. He's in Vegas with the Los Angeles Lakers. He's a beat reporter for the Lakers and sideline reporter for Spectrum Sports Net. And a former worker with the Wolves, too, as well. Covered the Wolves here just a few years ago. Mike Trudell's with us. Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, guys. Look, since you're Minnesotan, so like myself, I grew up in the western suburbs. I do my best thinking on a treadmill, so I hopped on a treadmill in Las Vegas, just so that I could really zero my mind into where you needed me to be.
The true pro.
So now I did have to turn it down though, because I had it at the normal time, and I'm like, I'm going to be a little out of breath. So it's only at like 2.5 miles an hour. So it's not even really a workout. I'm sort of just walking.
That sounds like me on the treadmill, actually, is just walking, and I might mix in like 30 seconds of a jog, and then I'm going to go back to walking. So
you got to want it, Manny.
You broke a sweat. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mike, this off season, I mean, me and Derek just talked about it. Can you remember an off season like this where we've seen, the amount of trades of stars going from one place to another, one conference to the other? I think we were all kind of blindsided by the Paul George trade to Oklahoma City last week. What are your thoughts on this offseason so far before we get to your squad, the Lakers?
Well, there's no question it's been wild. There have certainly been previous seasons that have been wild like this, but I think the reason that it's been particularly crazy and it will continue to be so in the future is that players have so much control now.
Yeah.
You've just seen it probably started with LeBron James and the decision to some extent, at least, where players were the ones that were doing the arranging. And even to the point where Chris Paul, another thing that was pretty surprising, he did so much work on the union's behalf with LeBron that he now knew all the rules and how the players could take advantage. So to me, we're only going to see this continue as these players can make these decisions themselves.
Yeah, it seems like the West, which has already been the stronger conference of the two, really going on about a decade here, maybe even longer. It just seemed like it got stronger with, Jimmy Butler obviously coming over from the Bulls. You get Paul George going to Oklahoma City. Houston, which was the number three seed in the playoffs, they seemingly have gotten stronger with the acquisition of Chris Paul.
Gordon Hayward's the only one that's really left the conference.
Right. Gordon Hayward goes from the West to the East. But really, you have to think the West is going to be even tougher. I mean, obviously, you have that juggernaut at the top, the Golden State Warriors, but it seems like the West has gotten even deeper.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the Timberwolves are a good example of looking at why, because consider how much the Wolves improved their team from last year. And I'm still not sure if they're higher than, probably the sixth or the seventh seed on paper heading into the season.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, they could bump up a couple spots. They could be better than Portland. But look, OKC, I have it right now, Golden State, Houston, San Antonio, OKC, and then you get into a mix of teams. They're probably Utah, even without Hayward, just because of the continuity and the way that they play defense. And then you have Minnesota right there in that mix of teams. You have the Clippers in there. You have Portland. You have Denver on the rise. So all of those teams would probably be, at worst, a five seed. And a lot of those teams could probably be the four seed in the East. So you're right. That's definitely – it's just the rich have gotten richer, in a sense, this summer.
Yeah, it's just made the league, I think, more top-heavy as far as the Western Conference teams go. And then, like you said, there's just – there's the good teams in the West, you know, like you mentioned, your Warriors, Rockets, Spurs. I think it's this glut of teams where if someone told me a certain order, I'd probably go, yeah, that's fine. I could see that just because they're almost interchangeable, and it's going to be so fascinating how this plays out on paper. I think especially even Denver getting, I think, a lot better than last year too.
Yeah, no question. Now, I like the Nuggets a lot. And Millsap is a perfect complement to Jokic, and they've got some up-and-coming young players. But they are still young, so this is what, you know, last year, since I'm from Minnesota, even though I work for the Lakers now and they pay my bills, so I have a vested interest in them doing well because everybody's happier. But I always root for the Wolves. I always watch the Wolves on League Pass. And last year, everybody, they were kind of the sexy pick early in the season. And I said, guys, look, they're too young to make that huge jump this year. Yeah. You got to let Towns and Wiggins at least to, you know, their third year in the league. And they didn't really have any veterans that were contributing much aside from Rubio.
Right.
So that landscape has changed a bit now where those guys are older. Plus you mix in some vets. We just now have to see how Thibodeau's can actually have them play. And I think we're all curious to see what happens.
That was the funny thing about last year. It's that a lot of smart people I saw just forgot that young teams really don't win. We saw it the year before with Utah where they predicted that a lot of people started predicting them. They became kind of the darling team a year before they were ready. And now I feel like that's even going to start to happen with Philly where we get so excited over like these young cores, and for good reason because there's obviously a lot of talent there. But we kind of get ahead of ourselves sometimes in looking at these squads.
For sure. And plus, you know, look, I'm not sure what you guys think about Tibbs, but he certainly can grate on players. And there's I don't want to call them all rookies, but these young players like Towns and Wiggins last year, Levine, who's obviously not been moved, yeah, they're probably not used to that type of coach. And it takes a little adjustment period to buy in and to learn exactly what he wants on defense, right? And that's probably where the Taj Gibson signing comes into play some, so that you can actually have somebody on the floor able to execute what he wants. And obviously the same thing with Jimmy Butler. So that has to help Tibbs now, and that Butler can do some of that coaching for him on the floor. And it's not just Tibbs. Like, if you guys watch League Pass, when the Wolves are on the road or whatever, you can hear him barking out every single call.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm like, that's driving me crazy, let alone Carl Anthony Towns, you know. But eventually, I think that you just can't help but have it be implanted to some extent. So it might rub the young players the wrong way. But I also think eventually it can help it stick once you get a couple of vets on the floor. So I do have the Wolves making the playoffs this year for the first time since I was a freaking senior in college watching on League Pass. But, you know, it's Wolves fans deserve it because it's been a long time coming.
I was 15 years old the last time the Wolves made the playoffs.
Yeah, I was 20. 20, and I'm 30. I'm 33 now. It's unbelievable.
I'm 35, so I graduated from college in 2004, so that was the best year, of course, to watch the Wolves. You had Sprewell and Sam Cassell, and then the injuries to everybody that made Kevin Garnett the point guard.
Anybody that could have been useful.
Yeah, and like Fred Hoiberg to be playing point guard, it was rough because that was a special season.
Yeah, Derek Martin starting at point guard in the Western Conference Finals. That's, whew, that was rough, man. All right, so let's get to your current squad, the Lakers. Obviously, the last couple of years have been tough from a wins and losses standpoint, and I mean the Lakers historically obviously have been the premier, you know, along with the Celtics have been the premier franchise in the NBA. Obviously, so it's weird seeing them at the bottom of the standings because we're just so used to them.
It's, you know, never happened
because it never happens. I mean, the Lakers are always there, even if they're not going to the finals, which is rare. Rare in itself, they're always there. They're always in the playoffs. So this last couple of years, I imagine, have been a little bit strange in Laker land, but there's a lot of promise there. And what can you tell us just about sort of how the organization is feeling now that they've drafted Lonzo Ball and just looking forward with this young team?
Well, to your guys' point, before these last 4 years, the Lakers had only missed the playoffs twice in their entire history.
Wow.
So they doubled that up. But here's the way that I like to look at it. For me, personally, first of all, I was well, and I say this with all love in my heart, I was well prepared for that type of losing, having come from Minnesota. Now, it's not something I'm proud of.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah,
but I did know. You guys know what it's like being a Minnesota sports fan. We haven't won anything since 1991.
Right.
With apologies to the Lynx, I'm talking about in the, you know, of course, in the men's four major professional sports.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's that cult. I mean, Gary Anderson. Look, don't take me down that deep dive. I'm gonna get upset.
Brett Favre going across the body. Yeah.
Yeah, so you know, now I'm in a dark place. So I was uniquely prepared. Lakers fans, on the other hand, and the people around the team were not. And as such, and nor should they have been, because they have just literally been winning every year for their entire history. So it is a feeling that it's an expectation. And now we see that returning with Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka. So everything feels right again. But to summarize the 4 years, what they did do, and this is, again, the same thing that happened to the Wolves. When you are bad and you have lottery picks that high for so many years, and you also, in the Lakers' case, happen to draft well late, Larry Nance Jr. number 27, Jordan Clarkson number 46, Ivica Zubac number 32, then you get the young core built up. And what I like to say is that Kobe Bryant was the reason why this all happened. Since he got hurt and was getting paid that much, it basically did not allow the Lakers to sign other players that would have put them, you know, on the fringe playoff level. And therefore not been able to restock. So it was, in a sense, a rebuild without trying to rebuild, which still accomplishes the same thing as what, say, Philly did or what Minnesota did or what Phoenix is now in, where you have this stable of young talent. And then the big edge that the Lakers have on all those other teams, and again, I say this with pained Minnesotan, players really do want to come to L.A. if you have something you can show them that is a path to victory. And now that they have that, things are good, and Paul George is probably the best example here, where he's just, not himself, but through his people, made it pretty clear what he would like to do. And you just don't hear that too often, right? You don't have players picking a team before they're free agents too often.
Yeah, it seems like Lakers exceptionalism has definitely made a bit of a comeback after the last few years. I look at Oklahoma City with Paul George, and I don't see if someone's so hell-bent on going to L.A., having Oklahoma City change it. I've never been to Oklahoma City. I'm sure it's fantastic. But, I mean, do you see any way that's changed at all right now or how it changes?
So I go to Oklahoma City twice a year now, thanks to ownership moving the franchise from Seattle, which is not super popular in the NBA, as many of us like to go to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with apologies to Oklahoma City, but yes, it's a simple town. You know, there isn't necessarily a ton going on there, but a lot of really nice people. I'm not sure how to say this in a better way. But, yes, I think that, look, the Lakers aren't going to weigh in on this, but most people around the league do expect that Paul George is not going to stay in Oklahoma City. So, he could prove us all wrong. We'll see. But what most likely happens to the Thunder, even in the best-case scenario, let's say that they play great, you know, Patrick Patterson hits a billion threes and Steven Adams screen roll comes back and the Westbrook George combo is excellent, et cetera, they're still going to lose to the Warriors at some point in the Western playoffs.
Right.
Or maybe even the Rockets and the Spurs. Who knows? Maybe one of the teams like Denver, Minnesota, whatever, get hot and find a way to win that series. So it's hard to see a scenario in which George finishes that season and thinks, you know what, I want to come back here when he has all these other opportunities out there. And people are going to put the Lakers, of course, at the top of that list. So we'll see what happens. But I think that the tea leaves are kind of reading a certain way in Los Angeles.
What are your thoughts on Lonzo Ball? He's the second pick now. So much has been made of him. So much has been made of his father. But what's the sense that you get from him now being a Laker? This is obviously what he's wanted. This is obviously what his dad has wanted, for him to be wearing purple and gold. But what's the sense that you're sort of getting from him in terms of...
And it's blue and gold.
Yeah.
Jeez. Well said.
but what are your thoughts on Lonzo?
Look, just like me, you know, the Lakers are from Minnesota and now live in Los Angeles. So, you know, there's obviously the connection there. Lonzo, to me, has the chance to be a really transcendent player. And I think if you watched him play at UCLA, if you watch even his high school film, there are only so many players that come out in the draft and maybe it's once every 5-7 years that have special passing capability. You know, I think Rubio to some extent does, but his is not fully weaponized because of the lack of shooting. Whereas when you have a guy that can pass like that, and even the same thing could have been said for Jason Kidd or Magic Johnson, you know, they weren't 40% 3-point shooters coming in. So I think the combo of having that vision, having the 6'6 height, being able to get up in transition and also shoot threes and finish at the rim, by the way, guys, 72%, I think, at UCLA as a in his 1 year
good
there
Lord.
Finishing at the rim. So, like, he's got the kind of Daryl Morey way of playing basketball that's really taken over the league, and not just Morey, but Mike D'Antoni, et cetera, that all of these coaches that are playing this way now, certainly Steve Kerr. He's got all of the way that you want to play in the current game of basketball down. So, of course, I'll be able to tell you more after Summer League because we always get at least a hint of how these guys are going to look based on Summer League. It took Kristaps Porzingis, what, a half of basketball here to win everybody over. But I do think that the way that he projects is going to be a very good thing for the Lakers.
How do you think he's going to embrace sort of the, with the Lakers and so, with so much history, so much tradition of championships and excellence, you know, he's got some shoes to fill, so to speak, you know, as a point guard coming in. Obviously, Magic Johnson was, you know, an icon within the organization, and now with him working in the front office, his fingerprints are going to be all over this roster. How is Lonzo sort of embracing this sort of pressure to sort of live up to that greatness of not only being the second pick in the draft, but also playing for an organization that has so much tradition and history of winning?
Yeah, I mean, all that's there, and Magic didn't hide from that. In his initial press conference, he asked Lonzo to actually look up on the wall at the retired jerseys and said, you know, Lonzo, we want there to be one that says ball one day. So it's not like the Lakers are, oh, let's give the kid some time. You know, they don't mind putting some pressure on him because I think they realize that that's the way that you can take a step, in a real step as a basketball player. So I don't think it's a bad thing. Lonzo is such a laid-back guy that I think that he's, I'm not saying that he's immune to this, but he's been hearing his father tell him this stuff since he was a kid, that he was going to be an all-time great player. So I don't think there's much you can say to Lonzo that he hasn't heard at home.
Right.
So and he's gotten himself to this point by being a terrific player. So that's not something I worry as much about, even though I think the question is fair. And you can ask, wow, man, all these players going to go at him? Sure. You know, but then eventually things settle down. And I'll give you a little anecdote on as to what Luke Walton thinks about this, because when Luke came into the league, his father as a broadcaster had been trashing, you know, various players for a number of years. We know that Bill Walton doesn't necessarily hold his tongue.
Right.
He had some thoughts about Shaquille O'Neal's game, and now here's Luke, you know, as the a late first round pick, I believe, coming in, and Shaq is his teammate. And Luke said the first practice or two were a little rough because Shaq was kind of, you know, Shaq had heard this and he was going to he was going to take it out on Luke. But then he learned who Luke was, and it was cool. Like it took a week. So maybe Lonzo has a couple of guys come at him because it's fun, because LeVar's been talking. But, you know, it's not that big of a deal. Ultimately, however he plays in the basketball court is going to be much more important than things that have been said and pressures that have been put on a guy. It's still going to be about the basketball.
I want to ask you about D'Angelo Russell and how you feel about how that all concluded and ultimately the trade as well, because there have been a lot of mixed reviews on that and whether or not they cleared cap space too soon without knowing that they had anything. Or just kind of get your take on that, all that.
So this is something that we've spent a lot of time talking about in LA radio over the last couple of weeks. And I know Russell pretty well from his couple of years here or in Los Angeles. And I think that, so two things. One, I think he's going to be much better than people realize. And if you just look at the, if you don't even want to watch the game and just look at the stats, compare his numbers on two bad teams, right, that didn't necessarily have the best chemistry, two different coaches, Kobe and Lou Williams were on one, you know, and then last year, his numbers for a 19 and then 20-year-old player, especially a point guard, are really good. He's a good shooter. He's a good passer. He can put the ball on the floor. He can get to the rim. He's got a mid-range game. He can shoot threes off the dribble. He's rangy on defense, even if he's kind of dies on picks like most young guards do. But he can play. And that I don't think is going to change. And so I think for Brooklyn, it was a great deal for them to get a guy like that, and they take Mozgov's salary. At the same time, if you're the Lakers, you have this plan for 2018-19, and Pelinka and Magic Johnson have been very clear that they have to have the cap space to potentially sign some max caliber players. The only way you were going to get rid of a contract like Mozgov or Deng was going to be to attach one of those young assets and young players to it. So I think both things can be true. Russell's going to have a really bright future, and also the Lakers, totally understood why they would make a move like that in order to try to prepare themselves for a team down the road. Plus, of course, since you have Lonzo Ball coming in, you still have Brandon Ingram, who I think is going to be also a lot better than people might realize right now. Those are the things you have to factor in when making a move like that.
And that's what I always thought about D'Angelo too, Mike, is what you said, that it seems like to me he needs a fresh start. Like you mentioned that first Kobe year, which is unfortunate that he got swept up in the farewell tour. And then I don't think Byron Scott was really the best coach for him, considering that there were times when, he was asked, what he needed to do to get on the floor and what he's been told. And he said, I don't know. I mean, stuff like that. It just seemed like after all that drama and tension in his first year, couple years, it seems like a fresh start's a good idea. But when I watched him play, yeah, I saw the things that you were mentioning. I mean, he can play.
Right. So there's, and Magic Johnson even said this himself. Maybe D'Angelo Russell as a leader wasn't where the coaching staff wanted him to be yet. And so that could be part of this also. But if you just look at the basketball skills, they're there. And so does he develop, does the change of scenery, as you mentioned, help him? Maybe so, because look at some of the point guards who have moved in their first couple of years. So the Chauncey Billups, Jason Kidd, Steve Nash. Right, so like point guards that take a little bit of time to cook, but with that said though, the Lakers now have Lonzo Ball, and maybe he is a much better fit with how Luke Walton wants to play. And so that again, both these things can be true. I don't think it's an either or. Like if Russell becomes an all-star, I don't think that necessarily means this is a bad move for the Lakers, depending on what happens for them in free agency. Because if they were able to get rid of Mozgov's deal and they're able to sign the free agents they think that they can or hope to next year, then it just makes all that much more sense, even though it stinks to have to lose a player that's talented and has a chance to be really good in the future.
I know you got to run here in a couple minutes, but last thing I'll ask you, you mentioned Brandon Ingram. I loved him coming out of Duke. I was probably expecting a little bit more out of him as a rookie, but he is a rookie, so I'm certainly not ready to hit the panic button on him yet. But what are your thoughts on him and where he's headed and what kind of player you kind of foresee him being?
So Ingram, if you watched him before the All-Star break, it's exactly what you said. You expected a little more. But then you remind yourself that he was – not only was he a young rookie, but he's 19 today. He's not even 20 until September.
That's wild.
And he really when people stopped watching the Lakers after the All-Star break, and I certainly understand why, Ingram took a big leap. Just look at his splits from March and April compared to earlier in the season. His shooting percentage went up like 15%. Mm. I mean, it wasn't like a slight adjustment. It just clicked, and he's guarding Paul George, he's guarding LeBron, he's guarding Kawhi Leonard. He's not backing down. You could just see the Lakers coaches kind of looking at each other like, whoa, this is the guy that we thought he could be that took a little while to cook. And I'm telling you that he's taken another leap even in between the end of the season and today. And I expect that Summer League is going to be a time when people – I said this for Porzingis. There's always a flash, and then NBA Twitter goes nuts, and they're like, whoa, okay, this guy can play. And this might be partly – some home cooking because I've been watching him more lately, but I do think that Ingram's game and his all-around skill level is going to be a surprise for some people that sort of looked at his rookie year and thought, man, that was kind of disappointing. I think he's got a little bit more coming.
Awesome stuff, Mike. We appreciate the time. We'll have to get you on again soon as we get closer to the season. Thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Guys, it's my pleasure. Say hello to the beautiful state of Minnesota and Lake Minnetonka. And if you see Phil Mackey, just go ahead and pat him on the belly and say, look, dad bods are in.
Dad bods and receding hairlines, man. That's what's in now, man.
I'm not. Look, I didn't say anything about his hairline. Okay, I'm just saying dad bod. Okay, you made the hair comment.
Well, I'm in that club too, so
he's
I
got
can't,
the same
I,
haircut.
Yeah, I got the exact same haircut, so I sympathize with Phil. So
yeah, it's all good.
All right, thanks, Mike. We appreciate it, man.
All right, guys. All right, take care.
All right, Mike Trudell, for the Lakers, Spectrum Sportsnet, also co-host of Thompson and Trudell at 7:10 a.m. ESPN Los Angeles.
That sounds early.
It does sound early.
Probably too early.
Thanks to Mike for joining us. Lots of talkers there. I mean, the Lakers are going to be a team that I'm intrigued by.
Well, that's why it was good to have Mike on, because the Lakers are interesting again.
Yeah.
They just have been flat out uninteresting for the last few years. And I mean, as much as the team, you know, had, you know, the Kobe Bryant farewell tour and, you know, when he was chasing Jordan's points number, like that was, you know, I think stuff that was, you know, relevant to more Kobe fans, Laker fans, but basketball fans in general,
mm-hmm.
you know, probably wasn't as special to them from just a pure basketball standpoint, because watching Kobe Bryant play basketball at that point was pretty sad.
Yeah, it was tough. And I mean, the 60-point game to wrap up his career was...
I'll never see anything like that again.
Yeah, I mean, that was insanity. I mean, just the way he... I mean, for the last 3 minutes of that game, I mean, he was old Kobe again. I mean, just hitting.
To be fair, the Jazz
shots.
Didn't care.
Yeah,
they had just been eliminated just an hour before the game, and
right. Yeah. So, but man, crazy stuff. But the Lakers would be fun to watch. Not a playoff team. I don't think. I don't think anybody expects them to be a playoff team. But
unless they're predicting a lot of injuries.
Yeah. But they've got some pieces there. I mean, you got Lonzo. You still got Jordan Clarkson. I like Jordan Clarkson just within. You know, a specific role. I don't view him as a player you would want to build around or anything like that. He may never make an all-star team, but he's got some skill. He's got some talent. Should be just
like, he's not a guy that stops you from drafting Lonzo Ball.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, he should be fun. I think Brandon Ingram will take a big step. And
the biggest thing for Brandon Ingram too is just to get bigger, and that's going to come with
just get
age.
Stronger. Yeah. Brooke Lopez. Yeah. We'll see.
I think Michael will enjoy having Brooke Lopez around. The Lopez brothers seem fun.
They do. They do seem fun. So the Wolves, since we taped last, have added Jeff Teague. They have added Taj Gibson.
This feels like 100 years ago, to be honest.
Yeah, it does. There is speculation about CJ Miles. There was speculation about Nick Young. Gosh, we should have asked Mike about Nick Young, about being around Nick Young, what that was like. But he's off to Golden State. Swaggy P is.
So what's interesting about Swaggy P taking the Golden State deal is that he took 1 year less, and I think, of course, more money to go ring chase.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes a lot of sense at his age, because I think he just turned 30, he's what, 30, 31?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And I mean, yeah, at this point, it makes sense, and he gets to stay out in California. But, you know, I was looking at it. I was like, you know, is this really what we're down to? I mean, because we heard Gerald Green rumblings. I was like, oh, great, Gerald Green. Who? And someone asked me, why are you so low on Gerald Green? Well, he doesn't play defense. He has a horrific shot selection. Like, just watching him, it's just so frustrating to watch him just essentially become a black hole. But I was talking to some people on Twitter today, and I mean, there are still players out there. So, I mean, I don't think it's hopeless that they find a shooter. So, I mean, there's CJ Miles out there. There's Mike Dunleavy. Thabo Sefolosha isn't, you know, exactly a shooter, but he's still out there. There are, you know, Aaron Brooks was actually a 37% shooter last year, too. So push comes to shove. I mean, if they want to find a third point guard, I mean, that's the kind of player that you can find in August on a minimum deal that you don't need to do now and tie up your cap space. But I think we'll find out on CJ Miles if they really want to include that 2018 OKC pick.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that's what it's basically going to come down to. The Pacers, it sounds like, from what I've heard from Doogie and Johnny Kay and some other folks, is that Indiana's sitting, waiting and ready for the deal. They're just waiting for Tibbs and Layden to say, okay, we'll part with the pick.
I think it was like Royce said today on the ride that, well, they're not making they're not going to be in the lottery anyway. So
right.
You're not getting the pick.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you get the pick, Oklahoma City figures to be somewhere in that 4 to 6 seed range, probably on the higher end of that, I would guess, with the addition of Paul George. So
you're probably 20-ish, 21?
Yeah, probably 20 at best. At best, you're probably looking at it being the 20th
so
pick.
So what are you writing home about with this pick? And I mean, this is something, too, that, I mean, yes, it's theirs now, but it's something that you hadn't had factored into the big picture months ago or heading into the offseason.
Right. Yeah. So if I'm them, I would just say, okay, I mean, you need shooting. You need somebody that's going to come and space the floor a little bit for you. They don't, I mean, Shabazz is gone, so Wiggins and Butler don't really have, they don't have a backup wing.
They actually don't have a backup.
There is no backup, and they can't, I mean, we know Tibbs plays his starters heavy minutes, but
they're not going 48.
Tibbs, you can't play them all 48 minutes. You can't play Jimmy and Andrew all 48 minutes.
But I like about like CJ Miles and somebody who suggested Mike Beasley. It's just, if you just need a guy who can, you know, hit shots off the bench, there's someone who's not afraid to shoot. But I like the idea of having a combo forward that can slide up and kind of solidify anywhere from that 2, 3, 4 range.
Yeah, it seems like you could put Miles as a small ball forward.
I guess what I heard is that he did play some 4 last year, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, and more teams are doing it, so you might as well, I mean, you might as well bring in a guy who's capable of doing it. I mean, he's not going to be your starting power forward or anything like that, but
this Wolves team is not built to play small anyway, so right. I don't think we'd see it a lot, but still.
Yeah, you might as well leave it as an option. Okay, so I saw before we taped, I saw Vince Carter signed a 1-year, $8 million deal with the Sacramento Kings. And
I like this for non-basketball reasons, just because I've loved Vince Carter for 20 years.
Yeah, me too.
And it would have just been so much fun to have a Wolves Carter jersey. And I don't buy jerseys anymore, but if I had the chance to buy a Wolves Vince Carter jersey, I would do that in a second.
Yeah, me too. That would have been kind of fun. That would have been kind of cool to see Vince in a Wolves uniform. But Sacramento is just a weird... Sacramento's doing...
They have a lot of bigs. I mean, Vince is like a 3-4 at this point.
Yeah.
And they've drafted big men, I don't know, every year for the last
years. They always say as you get older in the NBA, you always move up a position.
I'm surprised he's not playing like super center or something.
Yeah. I just remember, was it Steve Smith who was when they were doing those, when TNT was doing those, in NBA TV, they were doing those open court things, and Steve Smith, they had the segment called... it was something like EJ asked all the guys, you know, when did you know that you were done, like done playing? Mm-hmm. You know, I remember Brent Berry saying something about, you know, he had to come in and they put him on Rudy Fernandez, and he was like, I couldn't find him. Rudy Fernandez was all over the floor, and I couldn't find him. I couldn't catch up with him. That's when I knew I was done, you know. And Steve Smith, Schmitty was like, he was playing for the Bobcats.
Yep.
And Bernie Bickerstaff was the coach, and he said, yeah, Bernie put me in at the 4. That's when I knew I was done. He was a shooting guard
in his prime, right?
Yeah, he was a shooting guard. He was good. But, you know, you get to the end of your career, and you're playing power forward for the Charlotte Bobcats. I mean, whew. Wow. But, yeah, so Vince is in Sacramento. The Kings are... It's weird. I mean, they signed Z-Bo, which...
Who's still useful.
Yeah, he's still useful. They signed George Hill. I don't know how the George Hill thing is going to work out with De'Aaron Fox there. I don't know how much they're going to play and play together. I mean, I guess you've got sort of a three-headed monster of guards there with Fox and Hill and Buddy Hield.
I feel like the Kings have, like, two different puzzles, and they just threw them together and are trying to put together one puzzle.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot going on down that roster.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird. I mean, I guess with Dave Yeager being there, I could maybe understand why, you know, Vince would want to go back there playing for him in Memphis, and Z-Bo obviously too, having the connection with Yeager in Memphis. So I can kind of see it from that standpoint, but it's just kind of a weird fit. So I don't know. We'll see.
Can I give my quick thought on the whole point guard situation with the Wolves real quick?
Sure, by all means.
Okay, so the way that I look at this thing is that overall, so LaVine was obviously a good three-point shooter.
Mm-hmm.
He was the best on the team. Rubio and Dunn were subpar three-point shooters. We already know that.
Yep.
And neither really could hit from a lot of spots on the floor anyway. So even though the guys that they have added this summer aren't exactly dead-eye shooters, they're still as a whole
better.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be fine. And I know a lot of people are like, Teague, when he was signed, well, why don't they go get Lowry? Well, Lowry signed for $33 million a year.
Yeah.
And that wasn't feasible.
And I get the sense that Kyle Lowry, deep down, really wanted to go back to Toronto.
Yeah.
I just kind of have that feel of, you know, DeRozan's still there, and they re-signed Ibaka. It just felt like...
Well, Lowry had such a tumultuous start to his career in Memphis and Houston. He got kind of kicked around, got a bad mm-hmm. rep. And Toronto was really the one that took him in and really enabled him to flourish.
Yeah, so it seems like, to me, and again, I don't know Kyle Lowry at all. I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know too many people that probably know exactly what he was thinking. But my guess is that he was open to the idea of, you know, exploring free agency and talking to teams and being sort of recruited.
I feel like just doing your due diligence and making sure that you're going to make the right decision and going back.
Right.
You're not missing out.
Yeah, but I just get the sense that his heart has been with Toronto, with staying with the Raptors and you know, and being there and playing with DeRozan. I know him and DeRozan are close, and they've developed a really good friendship from playing together these last few years.
Well, he's a big fish in a small pond.
Yeah.
I mean, not that Toronto's a small city, but what I mean by that is he's an iconic Toronto Raptor.
Yeah.
I mean,
they love him there.
He's been on the most successful team in franchise history. And, you know, I look at, like, Drew Holiday going back to New Orleans. And mm-hmm. apparently he liked the way that they allowed him to be with his wife while she was going through her brain cancer treatment.
Yeah.
And George Hill flat out said that he didn't want to play for Tibbs.
Yeah. So at that point,
they got the next best guy.
They got the next best guy.
Who is still a good player. It's going to be fine.
That does crack me up. It's kind of like the immediate reaction. And I knew this was going to happen.
No matter who it was.
No matter who it was, because Ricky, I mean, obviously the relationship that fans have with Ricky Rubio is real, and it's there, and I understand it. Look, I am a fan of Ricky Rubio. I hope he does well in Utah. I will be pulling for him to do well in Utah. He's a likable guy. He obviously belongs in this league.
You couldn't ask for a better professional.
Yeah. He's not a bad player. I don't think anybody thinks Ricky Rubio's a bad... Anybody with a sensible basketball mind thinks that Ricky Rubio's a bad player. He's not a bad player at all. But Tom Thibodeau and this organization, I think, is looking for a different type of point guard, more of a scoring type of point guard, because...
As Britt said, raise the status quo.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Jeff Teague might not be better than Ricky Rubio in terms of just the player that he is, but to me, he's a better fit for what they want to do than Ricky Rubio is. And at mm-hmm. that point, I mean, look, Jeff Teague's not a bad player.
No.
He's not a bad player. He's a good player. And you know what? Take this for what it's worth, I guess, but Jeff Teague's been an all-star. He was on the all-star team 2 years ago. So, I mean, people are immediately sort of reacting to this thing like they've just downgraded so much and Teague is going to be terrible and he's not as good as Rubio defensively and he's not as good a passer. Okay, but he's a better scorer. And he may not be as good a passer as Rubio.
He can still set guys up.
He can still pass. He's still a good passer.
I know people didn't watch that Hawks team that won 62 games. Their ball movement was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And if Teague couldn't pass, he would not have been a part of that team.
Yeah.
And one thing I also like about it is it's 2 years with a player option. So it's possible that his deal could be off the books
mm-hmm.
just in time as Towns' money hits. And also, that also lines up with Taj Gibson's contract, which also had some annoying brushback, too. So that there's still the flexibility and hopes that by that time that Wiggins and Towns will be ready to take over this team.
Right.
And they'll have reached, you know, their primes because they'll be 24 and 23, respectively.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at this thing, right now, my opinion, Jimmy Butler is the best player on this team.
Yes.
I think the hope and the plan is that 2-3 years from now, Jimmy Butler is still on this team, but he's not the best player anymore.
I think something's gone horribly wrong if he's still the best player.
Right. I think
not that Jimmy isn't great, but I don't think that's anyone's plan sitting here in early July.
If 2 or 3 years from now Jimmy Butler's still on this team, but he's not the best player, you're probably in pretty good shape. You're probably in pretty good shape. I would want to imagine you're doing pretty good. So
how happy were you with the Taj Gibson deal?
I was fine with it. I mean, he was. Look, I mean, we talked all through the season, even going back to before when Steve was still with us. You know, Taj Gibson was a guy that I looked at and said, hey, why not? You know, and even then I was like, well, maybe you pull off a trade for him before I knew that he was going to be a mm-hmm. free agent this summer. And then when I found that out, I was like, okay, well, maybe he'll be a target in free agency. You know, he knows Tibbs' system, played for him. We talked about the Wolves needing a guy or two on the roster that can help sort of relay Tom Thibodeau's message and communicate that message, if you know, to some of the younger players. I think Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson are going to be able to do that perfectly. So he filled the need.
And I like that it's just $2 million, or 2 years, sorry.
Yeah.
2 years, $14 million. I know a lot of people, it was weird. People were saying, oh, wow, no, that's a great deal. I like the years on there. And then Patrick Patterson signed for 3 years and $16 million.
Right.
And it's like, well, it can still be a good deal. And who knows what the situation was. Maybe they thought that if they didn't act now, they weren't going to get their guy.
They had to get somebody. I mean, you can't you have to, in any offseason of any league, you have to play your cards right. You can't
overplay your hand, especially if you're the Timberwolves.
Yeah, you can't just sit around and say, well, we're going to wait it out. We like Taj Gibson. We want him, but we're going to see what Patrick Patterson does first. We're going to see what happens with JaMychal Green. If
you're waiting on freaking Patrick Patterson, and JaMychal Green,
yeah, I mean, if you're going to wait for those guys, and then what if they didn't sign Taj Gibson, and then Patrick Patterson still signs with Oklahoma City, and then you try to go back to Taj and Taj is signed somewhere else. Now what?
Then
you
have a problem.
Then you have nothing. And then we have people complaining about, oh, they haven't gotten anybody and they won't make any moves. And so, all right.
And the really funny thing, too, was about, wow, Tibbs and his former Bulls, you mean him signing two of the better players that he's ever coached that weren't, you know, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, and Ray Allen?
Look, he's not signing 36-year-old Kirk Heinrich here.
Right.
Like
he passed on Lou Alding and Joakim Noah. Like right. I just think it's such a lazy narrative.
All due respect to those guys. Thankfully, he did not sign those guys to the contracts that they were signed to. You know, so, you know, I mean, people, calm down.
And I think the thing to remember, too, is that this roster is not done yet.
Right.
There's still plenty of time to make moves and put something more together.
I am hoping for Derrick Rose to be signed by somebody so that those rumors can be put to bed.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's any interest at all on the Wolves front, but there's always going to be that people are always going to sort of chirp, and there's always going to be that speculation until somebody actually signs Derrick Rose. Well, there's always going to be that assumption that Tibbs wants to bring him here.
I remember the night free agency opened, and I love Ramona Shelburne's work. She's fantastic at what she does. On Twitter, she just casually drops, oh, can't rule out Minnesota and Derrick Rose. And it's like, you're not reporting anything. You're just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Stop it. This is how rumors get started.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, lots more to do. I mean, there's still quite a few moves that the Wolves can make here in the next few weeks. Our thanks to Mike Trudell for joining us this week and talking a little Lakers with us. We'll have to get our old buddy Steve on with us soon to recap a certain Jay-Z album that was released last Friday.
I heard back from him. He apparently hasn't heard it yet, and I haven't been able to run down a stream of it or something, so that's probably for the best. We haven't figured that out yet. We'll have to do that.
Sneak preview. I have it. I've heard it.
We can all huddle around Manny's phone.
And I love it. So, I love it. You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast, of course, at Podcast One. Search for us on iTunes and subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star rating. We'll appreciate that. And of course, you can find us at 1500ESPN.com. Thanks again to Mike Trudell for joining us this week. Thanks to you for listening. For Derek, I am Manny. Enjoy Summer League. Enjoy your off season, and we'll talk to you soon.